For WIC, HR 6201 also provides additional funding for the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for women, children, and infants, so that low-income pregnant women or mothers who become unemployed due to the coronavirus pandemic have access to nutritional food. It also waives certain requirements that might hinder WIC participation, such as the common rule, if people are aware of that. Food banks, there's $400 million in funding for local food banks to meet higher demand during the pandemic. And I certainly know that in many of our communities, there have been food banks set up. Schools are also giving breakfast and lunches, meals to their students that had been on such programs when school was in session. There's also SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And the legislation allows states to provide SNAP benefits to households with children who attend a school that's closed and who would otherwise receive free or reduced price meals. There's also an employer tax credit. So the bill contains a refundable tax credit up to 100% of qualified public health emergency leave wages and qualified paid sick leave. The credit is against the tax imposed on the employer for Social Security and railroad retirement benefits. There's a lot of different regulations here, so I'm just going to run through them a little quickly, and we can certainly send out our summary that we have of all of these. There's actually like 13 points I have here. So the next talks about unemployment insurance. So a provision also within this HR 6201 allows the U.S. Secretary of Labor to make emergency grants to states in the Unemployment Trust Fund. But states must demonstrate they have taken steps to ease eligibility requirements and expand access for individuals directly impacted by the coronavirus. Now, COVID-19 testing. The bill prohibits health insurance issuers, this is very important, insurance issuers from imposing any cost sharing for testing of the coronavirus, as well as any office visits to doctors, urgent care centers, or emergency rooms. So anyone who is uninsured and not covered by Medicaid, Medicare, the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, or the Affordable Care Act Marketplace, or any other individual or group health plan, is eligible for testing paid for by the funds provided to the Public Health Social Services Emergency Fund. So basically, it will be free for people that have no coverage and are not eligible for any sort of public or private insurance coverage. And then also, insurance issuers cannot impose any sort of cost sharing, meaning copays, for this kind of testing. Medicaid, the bill provides states with a temporary 6.2% increase in matching federal medical assistance percentages, or FMAP. As part of the increase, states must offer coronavirus testing under Medicaid without cost sharing. So anybody on Medicaid also, there's absolutely no cost sharing, which is good. And then there's also another bill, H.R. 748, which is called the stimulus bill, which some may have heard of being announced by President Trump recently. So unemployment, people who are unemployed would get an extra $600 per week for up to 4 months on top of the state unemployment benefits to make up for 100% of lost wages. Most workers that are usually eligible for unemployment benefits are included, like self-employed people and part-time workers. So that's great. Financial assistance. All U.S. residents with adjusted gross incomes up to $75,000 or $150,000 for married couples would get a $1,200 or $2,400 for couples, but $1,200 per person rebate payment. They are also eligible for an additional $500 per dependent child. The payments would start phasing out for earners above those income thresholds. Most people will start receiving payments in about 3 weeks. And then there's also loans to industries. There's $500 billion. Loans to hospitals at $110 billion. Airlines, $58 billion. State and local governments, $150 billion. And defense, $10.5 billion. So these are loans to industries, hospitals, airlines, state and local governments, and defense. Businesses would get a tax credit for keeping idled workers on their payrolls during the coronavirus pandemic. So long as the businesses meet certain criteria, they would get a refund for half of what they spend on wages, up to $5,000 per worker. Businesses would also get to defer their 6.2% tax they pay on wages that is used to fund Social Security. $200 million is set up for boosting Skype-style health checkups, so telemedicine, by investing in services and devices that would help with providers being able to have virtual visits with their patients so they wouldn't have to come in person. The stimulus bill includes nearly $25 billion for food assistance, including nearly $16 billion for SNAP and nearly $9 billion for child nutrition. Emergency assistance for schools is $30 billion. Student loans, there will be an automatic payment suspensions until September 30th for any student loan held by the federal government. Housing, overall, the bill provides more than $12 billion in funding for HUD programs and includes support for a variety of programs within housing support, including voucher programs and rental assistance. The bill also institutes a moratorium on foreclosures for all federally backed mortgages for 60 days beginning March 18th. So that runs until May 18th. Maybe that'll even get extended. I don't know. Those with federally backed mortgages who are experiencing financial hardship due to coronavirus may also request a forbearance for up to 180 days, which may be extended for another 180 days at the request of the borrower. So with appropriate request, it can expand as much as 360 days. The law also allows multifamily housing owners with a federally backed mortgage to request a forbearance for up to 30 days. Which could be extended by another 60 days at the request of the borrower, on the condition that they agree not to evict tenants or charge tenants late fees. Okay? And the bill also institutes a moratorium on filings for evictions for renters in homes covered by a federally backed mortgage for 120 days of enactment, so that's 4 months. In Illinois specifically, so those were federal mandates. In Illinois, several executive orders have been issued in the last week. There's Executive Order 10, which establishes the stay-at-home orders that we talked about last week. This order notes that details the provisions of that order are on our – oh, sorry, getting a little tongue-twisted here. So basically, the details of this provision of this order are on our website, and the order is posted there, too. So you can get details on our website. There's also a website, the state of Illinois, .gov website also has these resources. There's also Executive Order 11, that was 10, where individuals may leave their residence to work for or obtain any human services operations such as adoption agencies, long-term care facilities, residential settings for individuals with disabilities, and daycare centers for children of essential employees. Illinois school districts do not need approval by the school board for an e-learning curriculum. Okay. So that means that anybody that is considered an essential worker that includes these categories as well may leave their homes to go to work. If necessary, and that includes, like I had mentioned, adoption agencies, long-term care facilities, residential settings, and certain daycare centers for children of essential employees. And Executive Order 12 suspends healthcare workers' background checks. And there's also an order for the Office of the Chief Judge suspended all evictions in Illinois until mid-April. And on April 26, Governor Pritzker announced the Illinois COVID-19 Response Fund. So the governor's office, in collaboration with the United Way of Illinois and the Alliance of Illinois Community Foundations, established the fund to raise monies for nonprofits across the state, serving individuals most affected by the pandemic. So I bet there are people on this phone that their organizations might benefit from. There's also another fund that's similar but just focused on Chicago and the collar counties. And the Chicago COVID-19 fund has raised about $15 million so far. The first round of grants have already been awarded. And there's a website link that we can send out about that. And Cook County President Tony Preckwinkle announced a business relief package on March 26, just last week. And under this relief package, due dates for the home rule taxes like alcohol beverage tax, amusement tax, tobacco tax, gasoline, and hotel taxes will be pushed back, as will numerous fines and fees under the jurisdiction of the Department of Transportation and Highways, Environment and Sustainability, Revenue, Building and Zoning, and Public Health. The relief measures have the potential to free up $35 million for Cook County businesses. And a full list of business-friendly efforts is available also online, and we will post the PDF with the notes for that. And finally, in terms of newer things happening, school districts throughout Cook County suburbs are providing meals to families in need, and details on each school district have been compiled. And the link to that document will be available through the link we post with the notes from this call. So, pretty much wrapping up here, the last few things I have to say, actually, there's several pages here, but most of this are actually responding to some questions and concerns that have come up before, but we want to emphasize, and then we can go to whatever questions people have been typing in by email. So one question is, what is the Cook County Department of Public Health doing? So what are we doing? We continue to help healthcare providers as they respond to cases of COVID-19 in the community through support for testing, contact tracing, and case monitoring. And that's done in close association with our partners at the Chicago Department of Public Health, Illinois Department of Public Health, and the CDC. In the last week, we have added phone lines and operators to our COVID-19 hotline to best serve the number of callers we have received. So calls are being answered Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and that number is 708-633-3319. After hours during the week, callers can leave a voicemail, and our team will return their call the next business day. But we continue to have our after-hours communicable diseases on-call number for more urgent calls that need to be answered more immediately, and that's at 708-633-4000, and then follow the prompts. And we also have an email where people can put in questions, and this is the same email that Deanna mentioned, and it's ccdph.covid19@cookcountyhhs.org. And we are helping President Preckwinkle's office with text messages, and you can set yourself up for alerts. If you text Alert Cook, all one word, so text that, that's what you should put in the subject line, Alert Cook, and you send it to 888-777, 888-777, and then you'll receive one or two alerts a day. You are not overburdened with beeping on your phones all day long, but these are nice texts that come out periodically. And we continue to respond to media requests for information, and we are participating in press conferences. So, next question, what can your organizations do? As we say, be aware, get prepared, take action. So we're hearing from many organizations with questions about what to do when employees or clients are sick at work. So you can be prepared to take the right action to protect your staff and clients. And there are some FAQs about exposures and symptoms. And we compiled a selection of our most frequently asked questions about keeping employees and clients safe. And we can go through the questions and answers, a few of them now, but they are all, I think, available on our website. Or we can provide them to you as part of notes from this call as well. So one question is related to that, is how do I know if I've been exposed? So you generally need to be in close contact with a sick person to get infected. So close contact means that you're living in the same household as somebody who is symptomatic. You're caring for a sick person, like being a healthcare worker. You're being within 6 feet of a sick person with COVID-19 for about 10 minutes at a time, or being in direct contact with secretions from a sick person, meaning if you've been coughed on, kissed, or sharing utensils. Especially if you're touching a surface, you're eating with somebody, you're sitting next to each other at a table, you touch a surface that individual has touched, and then you touch your face. At this point, there's pretty wide community spread. So you should realize that you may not know that you've been exposed to somebody, but you probably, if you haven't been exposed to a case at this point, you may have been exposed to a contact of a case or a contact of a contact of a case. And you won't even know it because it's becoming so widespread in our community. That's the reason to stay home and shelter in place as much as possible and wash your hands all the time for at least 20 seconds, or use hand sanitizer, but washing your hands with soap and water is even better. Next question. A staff member is not feeling well and has respiratory symptoms. What should I advise them to do? You should advise your staff to stay home for at least 7 days after they first become ill or 72 hours after their fever has resolved and symptoms are improving, whichever is longer. So in other words, you have to be away at home, isolated for 7 days minimum, and then that also has to be at least 72 hours after your fever has resolved and your other symptoms are improving. And consult with your doctor if you have trouble breathing, a severe fever or cough, or other flu-like symptoms that are not better or worsening after 24 to 48 hours, or if you have mild symptoms but you're pregnant or immunosuppressed around it, or an older adult who has other underlying chronic health conditions. And remember, though, that you're not responsible for providing medical advice to your staff. And in doubt, advise staff to call their health care provider. Really, they should be in touch with their own doctor if possible. Next question, should people wear a mask to prevent COVID-19? At this point, CDC does not recommend that people who are well wear a face mask to protect themselves from respiratory illnesses, including COVID-19. Only wear a mask if you're a healthcare professional and it has been recommended. So a face mask should be used by people who have COVID-19 and are showing symptoms. This is to protect others from the risk of getting infected. The use of face masks also is crucial for health workers and other people who are taking care of someone infected with COVID-19 in closed settings. Number two, certain institutions, including Cook County Health, are now recommending staff wear procedure masks while in our healthcare facilities to prevent spread of COVID-19, as we are more likely to come in contact with cases through our daily work. Next, should people wear gloves or not? There's currently a shortage of disposable gloves, and unfortunately, we do not know if wearing gloves outside the home will prevent transmission of the virus. The important thing is to wash your hands a lot and don't touch your face. Inside the home, if you have disposable gloves, you can wear them when cleaning and disinfecting surfaces and when handling dirty laundry from an ill person. The gloves should be discarded after each use, cleaning. If reusable gloves are used, these gloves should be dedicated for cleaning and disinfection of surfaces for COVID-19 and should not be used for other purposes. But they can be washed with, if they're impermeable gloves, like rubber gloves like you wash dishes with, obviously you can use hot water and soap and water and you can clean them that way. Or you can use alcohol. Should I require staff, next question, should I require staff to provide proof of testing before returning to work? Right now, the CDC is not recommending any testing as proof of cure from the disease. It's recommended, though, to require anyone ill with respiratory symptoms to stay home for at least 7 days after they first become ill and 72 hours after your fever has resolved and symptoms are improving. One option could be to request that staff member provide a letter from their physician stating that they have been evaluated and explain when they can return to work. If you need documentation from a healthcare worker, from the provider. If your organization has an employee health service, contact them as soon as you feel ill to receive appropriate advice. All right, next question. What if I have an employee who has a confirmed case of COVID-19? All right, if it's a confirmed case and it occurs at a staff member or client of yours, initially close the facility just short-term to allow for cleaning. Only close contacts of confirmed cases, which means within 6 feet or more for 10 minutes, need to be quarantined, meaning no work, school, movement, and you have movement restriction, which we're all under anyway, and that should be for 14 days after the last exposure with the case. Secondly, contacts of contacts have no restrictions. So facilities should not close because contacts of cases visited that location. And when we say to close for appropriate cleaning, it means close the facility or close the floor where that individual worked on. It doesn't mean if they pass through other areas that that's a problem. It's a place where they've worked, maybe the bathrooms where they have used, and their immediate work areas where they are likely to have touched surfaces. So close that area. If you can air it out for 24 hours, that's great. But at the very least, do a regular deep cleaning with appropriate cleaning products. And there is guidance on the CDC website, but you don't need any special cleaning materials. I mean, you can use bleach. You can use the usual kind of cleaning chemicals that are used to clean facilities, but really clean all of the surfaces, not just wiping off the dust on a desk, but really clean the desks, clean the receivers of a telephone, the doorknobs, every surface you can see. Okay. Another question here. I have an employee who was directed to self-quarantine. Should other employees in public be told? Well, the Illinois Department of Public Health states that if an employee is confirmed to have COVID-19, employers should inform fellow employees of their possible exposure to COVID-19 in the workplace. But we need to maintain confidentiality as required by federal law. So employees exposed to a coworker with confirmed COVID-19 should refer to CDC guidance of how to conduct a risk assessment of their potential exposure. The health department does not have the resources at this point to follow up on contacts of every single case. So we are really relying on employers to try to do a little bit of detective work or inquiring. If you know it, if you have been informed that one of your employees or staff people or clients is positive, to find out who has been in contact with them and whether it's been this so-called close contact. If there's been any close contact of staff or clients, we suggest this self-quarantine, which means that individuals that have been exposed to a case, not exposed to a contact of the case, just exposed to a case, and they are not themselves ill, they should quarantine. Isolation is required if you're the actual confirmed case. That means try to keep yourself to one part of your home, sequestered off from other members of the household. But if you are not symptomatic, but you've been exposed to that case, you may be in your home, but do not go out. Next, the CDC describes how being in the same indoor environment, such as a classroom or a hospital waiting room, as a person who has symptomatic laboratory-confirmed COVID-19 for a prolonged period of time, but not meeting the definition of a close contact, is considered low risk. Though that guidance is changing recently, you're still considered low risk, but we are moving away from having low risk and that we can say that everybody is low risk on some level because all of us in one way or another have probably been exposed to a case or will be shortly. So we all are considered low risk. So if you're in a waiting room or you're in a classroom with somebody who's positive, but it's not like you have sat next to them for a prolonged period of time, you are considered at low risk. Okay, next, the CDC describes interactions with a person with symptomatic COVID-19 cases, such as walking by the person or being briefly in the same room, as no identifiable risk. So that's considered no, or what they've reclassified that as unknown risk, right? But basically it means that if you just pass somebody in the hallway, you are not going to have any higher risk than you have anyway of just walking around the neighborhood and not knowing whether anybody you pass on the street has been positive. You are not likely to get it that way. And here, almost done here. After the 14-day quarantine, are people still contagious and encouraged to stay at home? No. After your 14-day quarantine, you are free to go. That still means we are on I don't want to use the word lockdown, but we are right now supposed to be staying at home as much as possible, so that will not change. But you go back to being like just the general population after your 14-day of quarantine. So follow the recommendations from your local city or village or jurisdiction about continuing to stay home and social distancing for anybody who is healthy. Okay. Another question here. In addition to the FAQs we just reviewed, you received a couple of questions via email. One was about services for people experiencing homeless. So what is CCDBH planning in terms of isolation and quarantine options for people who don't need to be in a hospital but can't self-quarantine at home, either because they have no home or because they have high-risk family members? So CCDPH is working very closely with our emergency management agency to plan isolation and quarantine options for Cook County residents, suburban residents, who need isolation space. So meeting the needs of people experiencing homelessness is a priority, and we are incorporating their needs into the planning process. Providers in Cook County Health and the Cook County Department of Planning and Development staff are in regular discussions to address issues as they arise. And as soon as we have more definitive answers about this, because plans are moving very quickly to address this issue, we will let you know. Okay. So that concludes.
Oh, you know what, Rachel?
What I'm going to say. Yeah, go ahead.
Did get a couple other questions via email during the call. Are you ready to take a couple of those?
I am ready.
I knew you were. All right, great. Thank you. You know, I just wanted to jump in because the first question we got was related to the one you just answered about people experiencing homelessness. So I wasn't sure if there was anything else we might be able to say. The emailer was wondering if CCDPH has formed a task force to look into housing options at local hotels for people experiencing homelessness and whether there were any updates about that work moving forward or any funding for that.
Yes. All of those things are in the works. There is a task force that is being spearheaded by the Department of the Cook County Department of EMERS, Emergency Management for short, and it includes people from the Cook County Health, from the Cook County Department of Public Health, working also with the city. People may be aware that McCormick Place is going to be, or parts of it we're going to be turning into places. There will be various, I think, areas within McCormick Place for people with different levels of needs for care or assistance. We are very concerned about the well homeless so that they don't become sick. We are working with hotels and other kinds of facilities to try to ramp up the ability to house folks as the epidemic continues to progress. I don't have any specifics yet about when any of these places will be available, but we are really trying to work on this really all the time. There's a major task force, and they're working on it day and night on this. I just don't have anything definitive to announce yet.
Great. And, you know, we'll continue to address some of these issues about people experiencing homelessness on our weekly calls. And I have been monitoring the box. So if there are any other developments, the folks who have made these particular requests for information, I'll be sure to get back in touch with you as well. So we'll do it both ways, right? Kind of generally in the calls, making sure that we continue to address. But I'll follow up with any further information we may have with the people who are really interested in that. Another question we got was just about applications for the United Way Foundation that you mentioned, the COVID response funds. Those links will be in the notes from the call, so you'll be able to access those right away from that document tomorrow when it's up on our website. Because it's a long URL. All right, and then there was a question for you, Rachel, about whether there was a template for COVID-19 employee authorization letters for Illinois. This question came in right after we were talking about, can folks come back to work? Do they need a letter? And we said one option might be, you know, a letter from a doctor. Do you know of any templates that might exist?
We do them all the time, and there is a template that has my signature on it. And it is, we are giving people letters upon request if there, you know, we have some documentation. Certainly if you've been a case, we know if you've been, you know, if you or your employee or whatever, anybody has been positive, you know about that. If we know that you have been off because you've been exposed to somebody or because you have been told to self-quarantine, if we have some documentation of that, if you call our hotline, they would be able to provide by email a signed letter saying that you have been requested to be off work until cleared by the public health department, or if you are ready to go back to work, we can put that date in there. So we are providing that for people who are not able to get these letters from their own providers, but we still need to have some understanding that you have been under quarantine because you've been exposed to a case, or because you have been ill and you have been self-isolating, but you've been in contact with a doctor about this. And certainly if you've been tested and you've been positive, we can provide, you know, then certainly we can provide you with a letter. But we really want people to try to reach out to their own providers for this kind of documentation. But in those instances where that's not possible, we are able to help with that.
Great, thank you. And then one last question. Is the Cook County Department of Public Health currently doing routine restaurant health inspections?
No, we have stopped our routine restaurant health inspections because restaurants are closed for customers, you know, sit-down customers. However, we are doing several things with restaurants. First of all, if a restaurant is shut down because of any sort of concern of a foodborne illness or COVID-19, we will be doing inspections before they open up again. We also are in contact with all of our restaurants. We have started now because yesterday and today we received guidance from the state specifically for restaurants. So we are making sure that guidance is passed out to all of the restaurants in the jurisdictions that we do inspections in, which are not all the municipalities, but in those that we have responsibility for, which includes all of unincorporated Cook County, and then also those restaurants or those municipalities that we have contracts with to do their inspections. We are sending out all of this guidance, state guidance, and we are also calling them all and making sure that management understands that guidance.
Great. Thank you so much. And that, those are all the questions that we received. Thank you.
All right.
Terrific. And then I think, yeah, since there's nothing else, we can go ahead and wrap up this call. Thank you so much. That's all the information we have to share with you today, and we're so happy you could join us. Please remember that the call recording and the notes from this call will be posted to the CCDPH website on our COVID-19 page. The recording and notes from last week are all the way at the very bottom of that page. We'll add the notes and recording from today right underneath that, and that should be up by the end of the day tomorrow, and that's at cookcountypublichealth.org. And then we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you very much, everyone. And thank you, Rachel, for all that information. Bye-bye.
Your conference is ending now. As requested by the host, please hang up.